Welcome to the Digital Agency Pros Podcast with Andrew McBurney, your host of Digital Agency Pros. In this podcast, we sit down and talk to CEOs, founders, and professionals in the marketing world and talk shop all things related to building an agency and marketing. All right, let's get into it.
Hey guys, welcome to another show. Today we have the CEO of Kixino named G, and he's his agency is an award-winning startup and small business marketing agency. Welcome to the show, man. I'm happy to have you here.
Thanks for the invite. I'm very pleased to be here.
Awesome. So you have quite the background, but how did you get to where you're at today running your agency?
Right. It depends how far you want to go back, Andrew, to be honest. way back when in previous lives, I used to run a post-production company. I was a photographer by trade. That's where I started. Back in the days of film, back in the days of 4x5 and 8x10 cameras, loading dark slides in darkroom and that sort of stuff. I was primarily a studio photographer, advertising, commercial work. Clients were people like Ford Motor Company, British American Tobacco. I'm ashamed to say, working with agencies like J. Walter Thompson, Gray's, various WPP agencies have us. That's where I started. But more recently, in terms of marketing agencies, my history really started in around 2001 when I was headhunted to join a software company as their global director of marketing. It was a great time. It was a good time to be in marketing. It's sort of just on the cusp of when the internet was really coming into mainstream usage, if you like. It was a fantastic opportunity that I got to meet many fascinating people, including Steve Jobs on two separate occasions.
Wow.
But after about 7 years there, I felt I wasn't really moving forward in terms of career path or, self-fulfillment, that sort of thing. I wasn't feeling the love, Andrew, It was just, it was time to move on. So I was looking around and, like I said, the internet was just beginning to sort of shape consumer buying habits, all of our buying habits. It became a lot more accessible. Bandwidth was going up, but I was noticing how the early adopters seemed to be larger companies with the budgets and obviously resources to push themselves front of mind in terms of consumers. At the same time, it seemed that there were numerous startups and small to medium-sized companies who had a great story to tell but didn't seem to be getting a look in, which is where I had my mini epiphany, if you like. It was just the rules of business, value communication, services were being set by some of the biggest brands in the world. And these were the guys who were setting customer expectation levels for everybody else. And smaller companies needed to have access to the expertise, the tools, the services that big companies take for granted because of how increasingly important the customer relationship was becoming before, during, and obviously after the sale. So, this basic idea was all I could think about. It was growing, it was maturing in my head. And so eventually in January 2008, I resigned my comfortable corporate job with all the trappings of, international travel and a company BMW and expense accounts and all that sort of stuff. And we launched Kixino. And like I said, that was back in 2008, which, as you recall, Andrew, was not exactly the best time to start a business. But with not a small amount of luck and the support of some fantastic clients at the time, we weathered the storm of the post-boom recession. And today, nearly 14 years later, the agency has grown into a 19-person organization that spans 9 countries, we're still primarily helping startups and SMBs, primarily in North America, Europe, and Australia, to understand and deploy next generation marketing, sales, and communications capabilities within and across their organizations. About 80% of our clients are based in North America, primarily the US, even though we're headquartered in Europe. We also became software developers ourselves with the launch of a solution to better manage and control brand language assets while optimizing and delivering content to any digital channel. That's a product that we have called Qarto. That's Qarto.com.
Is that something you sell publicly?
Yeah. I mean, it was primarily we built it as an internal tool for ourselves. We were getting more and more inquiries for, to be honest, larger brands who, you know, they had the ability to control, you know, brand guidelines usage. You know, they had that all documented, images, that sort of thing. But it all sort of fell to pieces when you went across language, you know. So, you know, you'd have a product manager who was very strict about how you needed to articulate the value of a particular product, the features, the benefits, the type of language you would use to describe it. But that would be in English. And once you went into other languages, there wasn't a systematic way of being able to control and govern the articulation of the value proposition in another language in a systemic and process-driven way. So we created Qarto to address that issue so that there was consistency in brand language regardless of the language. So we did it for ourselves and then very quickly realized that, well, you know what? I mean, this is just a tool that we could put a decent UX and UI on the front of and offer that out to other clients. That's how it started. But to be honest, what most people do is they'd just rather us do it because they just don't want to get involved. So they just, you know, they throw us the content and the languages and they give us any guidelines they have in those languages. And then we use a system to turn the stuff around primarily better, faster, cheaper. I mean, it's a way of controlling those assets, those language assets, in the way that you would control, you know, a logo or a piece of creative or anything else. And you know, clients for that have included people like AMI or Jaguar Land Rover or Johnson & Johnson, Google, Intel, Timberland, some big names for that sort of stuff. But in terms of, I mean, you obviously the podcast is focused on what we class as digital marketing. And I'd just like to say a little bit about that. I'd push back on the idea that we are a digital marketing agency, because I think the using the word digital is slightly superfluous, because at the end of the day, everything is digital, right? You know, TV is digital, billboards are digital, print is digital. But more than that, categorizing an agency as being digital, I think, does a disservice to its work and its outlook. It's kind of putting a barrier up when in reality we should be looking to bring barriers down, you know? So talking about a digital agency, I think, is a little bit nonsensical. You know, you might as well say electrical agency, you know? You know, yes, we use electricity, but that shouldn't be what defines us, right? So it's not digital marketing, it's marketing in the digital world. And those two positions are very different, and I don't think they're interchangeable. I think the term digital marketing agency is not only an outdated term, but I contend that it puts the focus on the wrong things. Because I think, you know, we're a marketing agency that uses the most appropriate channels of communication to address target audience groups, right? And that's it. And if we consider an agency as a digital marketing agency, we might as well talk about, you know, website URLs talking about www, right? Which we don't do anymore. And it, you know, because it's implied, it's implicit in the terminology and in the articulation of the value, I think. Yeah, so that's really, you know, in a nutshell, how we came to be. And here we are today.
That's awesome. So in terms of your team, you mentioned you were spread out across multiple, I think you said 9 countries. Where, like, how did that start? Were these like freelancers that came on? Were you like hiring people with HR in these different countries? Like, what does your agency structure look like?
It's a little bit of both. The team started with at the beginning, there were 3 of us. There was me, I'm based in northeastern France, as you can tell by my very strong French accent, not. and then another of us was in just south of London, in the UK. And the third musketeer was in just south of Boston.
Okay, so nice. So you had a nice spread there in terms of geographic location.
Yeah. And, you know, the other two individuals are just people, you know, people that I've known for a long, long time, you know, 10, 15 odd years. And as we grew and we saw certain core competencies which we couldn't fulfill as efficiently as we wanted, it was just sort of through networking, really, you know, people who know people. And we grew organically like that. It wasn't so much, you know, a formal HR process, you know, sits vacant, wanted XYZ type person. And, you know, to be honest, 14 years ago, I didn't think we'd be 19 people. To be honest, I think we're a little too big for what the original plan was. But, you know, we're here and we've just grown where the requirements have taken us, you know, what competencies are being looked for. And, you know, at the beginning, we didn't need things like motion graphics designers. We didn't need things like animators. We didn't need things like photographers. We didn't need things like, we've got business development people as well now. But at the beginning, we thought we were going to be a traditional marketing agency, whatever that is.
Right.
And we've just taken on these other people as client requirements have taken us and as we've seen the industry grow in different directions.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. And yeah, it's interesting that you said it that way. And it kind of ties into that, the statement that you said earlier about staying fluid with the needs of your clients, right? And making sure that those needs are met rather than staying inside that box of digital marketing and only working with a certain set of tools. And now in terms of ensuring that you have the competency to deliver on the client needs, how do you handle that? Like when a client comes to you, let's say it's a, it doesn't really matter what kind of business, but let's say they have a budget, right? They're not somebody who's like they're not going to eat if they spend this money on their marketing. And they have a large budget and they want a lot of stuff done. They're open to ideas, right? Are you coming in with the more the creative side of stuff? Like the, you mentioned animators, that's a really cool value proposition. There's not a lot of agencies that can compete with that. And then are you also coming in with like the more marketing stuff, like the more, it's all marketing, but the more results-driven digital marketing things like maybe Facebook advertising or Google advertising or SEO, like does that mesh in your agency or do you kind of see certain things as your lane and you stay in them?
Well, I think this is where we differentiate ourselves from many agencies out there, Andrew. And obviously you'd know better than I whether that's true or not. But we don't come at it from a services proposition. We don't come at it from a marketing actually proposition. We come at it from a business proposition, right? At the end of the, you know, you can say what services do you focus on? For my perspective, dare I say it, services are unimportant. I don't care about services. Okay, maybe not unimportant, but coming from a service provision perspective, I think is looking at things in totally the wrong way. Because there's a danger of cognitive bias, right? You know, approaching a client problem from a services position. You know, it's a bit like Maslow's hammer, you know, also known as the law of the instrument. I mean, most people know it as, you know, if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? The danger with approaching a client engagement from a services first perspective is that your service is selling instead of solution selling. You know, if you're a web design agency, for example, all you want to do is sell web design, right? Mm-hmm. But often the client problem isn't necessarily the physical design of the website, you know, or the technical side, the platform, the hosting, the layout, the color palette, and you know, all of that sort of stuff. Usually the biggest problem with a client website is the content, is the copy, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's been sort of tacked on at the end after thinking about pretty pictures. Mm. And then it's copy and pasted from a brochure or something that somebody wrote 12 years ago. Mm. And it doesn't resonate and it just doesn't work. It hasn't been thought about. They haven't done the basics, right? Mm. So what happens is you as a web design firm are hell-bent in selling web design services. So the client gets a Swiss awesome looking website, but the copy still sucks, right? And the client problem is still there. Mm-hmm. So what you've got is they've blown thousands on a new site, but they're still not getting sales. Mm-hmm. So in the longer term, that doesn't help any of us, right? I mean, certainly doesn't help the client, but it also sends a red flag to others that as an industry, marketers don't care about business outcomes, mm-hmm. right? And at the end of the day, that's what we're selling, right? We're not selling services. We're not selling branding or websites or social or advertising or whatever. I mean, these things are tools to get us to the end goal. Mm-hmm. What's the end goal? Sales. Sales is the end goal, right? Growth is the aim. That is that is the business. We're in the business of growth. Mm-hmm. Our clients are businesses, and businesses don't care about marketing. They care about sales. They're focused on the destination, not the journey. And mm-hmm. so coming at it from a business perspective, right? You know, before we onboard any client, you know, I call it a three-legged stool, right? Generally speaking, the client has a business result that they're looking to achieve. That's the first leg of the stool. Mm-hmm. The second one is the timeline they want to get to that business result. And the third one is a budget to get to that business result. And usually, maybe it's the type of clients we attract, Andrew, I don't know. But usually there's usually one of those two legs or three legs that don't actually marry up. And it's usually the third one, right? They're usually very, very optimistic about what they can achieve for a certain budget. Mm. And then our job as an agency is to fit a quart into a pint pot, right? Mm. You know, we just have to get out the shoehorn and see what we can do. And if after doing discovery and we take a look and we say, look, based upon what we've learned about your business, your market, your competitors, etc., you know, we don't believe that particular business result can be achieved in this timeline at this budget, then we hold our hands up and say, look, you know, there's something going to be wrong here. And then it's a question of adjusting one of those three parameters, mm-hmm. you know, either being a little bit more conservative with the business result, being a little bit more generous with the timeline, or, you know, dipping deeper into your pockets, right? Until we can actually make that work. Because that's what we're selling. Because that's all that if businesses could get away with doing any marketing and just could get sales, that's what they would do, right?
For sure. Yeah. And nobody's waking up like, oh, today I'm going to just nail that Facebook ad campaign. Like no business owner wants to do that, right? They want the result. And it's an interesting thing that you brought up. I'm not sure it's actually ever been brought up, but it's something that like I live and die by that, right? And I tie it to ethics, right? So if a customer comes to me, like I used to sell, my main service was SEO, right? If a customer comes to me and it's obvious that they need to go PPC, or maybe it's like LinkedIn because they're more B2B, or for whatever reason, SEO, like they may think they need SEO, like maybe somebody sold them they need SEO, so they reached out to an SEO company, right? They're having that that ethic, that ability to say like, hey, I'd love your business, but here's the thing, right? And being able to, in my case, I wasn't that full service agency, so we couldn't, we didn't have that liberty to form something around them. It was more so like, here's what we offer if you don't fall inside of these. Like if we can't genuinely help you, we just can't help you, right? But we would send people away and connect them with people that we were confident could help them, right? And I love how in your agency, you have that culture and that philosophy where it is that client-centered approach where it's like, let's look at the results that matter for the client before we start painting with these brushes.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think you've definitely hit the nail on the head. And that's part of the reason why we've expanded the services offering that we've had, because I just didn't feel comfortable handing the torch over to another services provider who was more specialist in another area to take as good care of the client as we had up until that point. And I mean, the other side of the coin is obviously when you have a client who's split activities across different providers, and it looks like it, right? You know, they've got the logo designed by somebody and they've got somebody else putting together the website and they've got somebody else doing social media and there's somebody else doing ads and somebody else doing SEO. And the whole thing just looks like a collage, or, you know, it just doesn't gel, right? There's just no consistency, because at the end of the day, nothing matches anything else, right? You're patting yourself on the back because you think you've saved a fortune, but actually you've cost yourself a ton. Because customers see an uncoordinated mess, right? Nothing looks like it belongs with anything else. Mm-hmm. The ads don't feel like they're coming from the same position as the website copy or the email newsletter or blog articles. And that's because your marketing team is a bunch of different providers and you are the single point of management directional. I mean, you as in the client is a single point of coordination. But since you don't have any formal training or education in marketing, you don't know what to focus on and what to ignore. You know, you don't know what you don't know, in effect, right? Mm-hmm. So the result invariably looks like a mess. Mm-hmm. So unless you have a skilled and experienced marketing person on your payroll dividing marketing tasks across multiple providers, that inevitably leads to fragmentation and varying communication, value proposition, and creates confusion and obfuscation. So I think that's one of the reasons why we got involved in content, or we got involved in SEO, or we got involved in these other, you know, parallel disciplines, because it was important to have something cohesive to deliver as a proposition, as a single point proposition to the client.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. Now, in terms of new revenue, like going along that whole road of servicing needs, right? There's you can make a new sale to a client, right? Or you can expand the service offering to an existing client, right? And increase the budget or whatever that might look like. In terms of your internal business metrics, your revenue on a month-by-month basis, is that something you're tracking, like the expansion of existing customers in terms of revenue and the acquisition of new clients that you've never worked with before?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we try to actually put them under the same umbrella, because they're clients. They just have different needs, and they're just at a different stage of that onboarding process. Mm-hmm. So we try to break it down. It's quite difficult because, you know, we don't specialize by industry or geographic region or that sort of thing. So, you know, we'll have a client in fintech or healthcare, where the mix of the engagement plan will be totally different to somebody in manufacturing or in software development or in SaaS or something. So it's quite difficult to do it from there. And at the same time, you can't really do it by budget either, because since we're setting the benchmark by business result, and each company, each business is obviously at a different stage and has different goals and has different infrastructure and all the rest of it. I suppose you could do it as a percentage of like gross revenue or something, but really we don't handle it in that sort of way. We'll sort of either do it by resource allocation internally from the agency, or we'll do it as a business result percentage based upon the data that they've shared with us, which they have to do as part of the onboarding process. I mean, we insist on seeing a business plan before we'll take any client on. And that's simply because most clients don't know how much or how little marketing is going to cost them. And they're waving a wet finger in the air, right? And they're like, well, yeah, I guess it's going to be about this, right? And they haven't got a clue. They really haven't got a clue. So it's important to understand what that amortization of marketing is looks like in a spreadsheet to see how that works. It also helps us if the business is seasonal, so that you know, we can plan ahead for drier times, if you like, to even things out from a an outbound perspective or a visibility perspective, so that there's and then pair things back in times of a plenty, if you like, so that it's consistent from the outside. But it totally depends. I mean, everything is bespoke. I think it has to be, and I think clients deserve that, right? That's what I mean. You know, we don't have packages, gold, you know, bronze, silver, gold packages. You know, we don't have a takeaway menu and saying a website costs this and an SEO program costs that, because it's everybody's got different business goals. Everybody's got different business expectations. And certainly if you're a pre-positive revenue startup, your goals are going to be very different to a small to medium-sized business that's been going for 25 years with, you know, 10, 20 employees. So, you know, painting everything with the same brush, I don't think is fair for either party.
Yeah, definitely. Now, in terms of like making sure that result is met for your clients, how do you set the expectations from the get-go? Like, are you selling entire marketing campaigns to them right off the hop and they're coming in with like a certain time period of a commitment, or are you selling kind of a small taste of it as a first step? What does that look like?
Again, it that all comes from that initial onboarding process, you know, the three-legged stool I was telling you about. So once we understand more about the business, the financials, the sales growth of the business, the business strategy as opposed to the marketing strategy, where does a business owner want to go, right? What is their 1, 3, 5 year plan? You know, what is their exit strategy? Are they looking to, you know, what is the goal of that company? And then work backwards from there based upon their current sales growth pattern. What the customer acquisition costs are looking like today, an audit of what they've got in terms of marketing collateral, how effective their marketing is today, all of that sort of stuff. And then from that, we can form an assessment as to how realistic the business goals they've set as a brief to us are going to be. And then from there, we can say, okay, so you want to get from point A to point B in this amount of time frame based upon a budget of X, A, B, and X. I don't know why we're always using A, B, and X, right? But, you know, if we're setting those parameters, then based upon the history, based upon internal resources, based upon whether they can actually close, based upon inventory, based upon lots of stuff, right? Because if we give them 100,000 leads tomorrow and they can't fulfill those orders, then that's a problem. And yes, you can say it's a business problem, but it's a marketing problem, right? Because it's creating an issue for the end user, and that's a perception issue between the end user and our client. So there's expectation management all the way along the line. You know, loads of companies will say, okay, I need to go from here to here, but they don't actually look at the internal business processes, resource allocation, all of that sort of stuff to see whether the company that they see their business growing into exists or can exist with the infrastructure that they already have.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes
sense. You know, it's setting client expectations, isn't it, really?
Yeah, definitely. Now, in terms of like talking to you, you know a ton about this stuff. You're a very smart person. You can obviously think on your feet. Sometimes we bring on like very well-intentioned and intelligent team members, but maybe they're less experienced. Maybe they haven't seen the whole thing, or they don't necessarily have that far-reaching vision. How do you imbue them with the ability to see the things that you're talking about, so that maybe you're not spending time going down this rabbit hole with somebody who you actually could have determined maybe they weren't a qualified client to begin with in the, I guess, pre-onboarding, like you're still in the sales process. Is there anything you do from a leadership perspective in that regard?
With our own teams internally,
your own team bringing on marketing clients. Yes. Yeah,
I have to say, and it's a boring answer, Andrew, and I'm sorry, but we very, very rarely have those sorts of conversations. I mean, firstly, I'd like to say, I mean, we have this three rule onboarding process we have with the client, which is on the website. I mean, it's ripped off from the McKinsey's positioning, right? You know, if we can't bring value to the client that's over and above what their investment is, we don't take them on, right? Mm-hmm. We need to believe in the company, the product, and what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we won't take them on. And, mm-hmm. you know, if we don't think that it's a sustainable business, based upon the budget that they're setting themselves, we won't take them on. So there has to be an internal agreement between pretty much everybody within the agency before we even take on a new client. And since I'm the customer facing, for better or worse, I'm the customer facing point of contact, I basically have to sell the opportunity to the team.
Gotcha.
And they'll grill me, right? You know, why should we do this? Because at the end of the day, Andrew, we're a small agency, right? And it's if we take on a client which we're not entirely convinced with, it means we can't take on another client who maybe has a goal that we can identify with better. But if we can't get emotionally invested in the business, then we don't take it on. Because, I mean, what's the point? You might as well work for a bank or something, right? I mean, we're not doing this for the money, right? You could do lots of other things, and if you wanted to be rich, you know, you're never going to be wealthy in that respect. So it there has to be some personal emotional satisfaction to getting out of this. And since, as I said, we're a small agency, so we don't have the A team and the B team. We have the team. So you know, I wouldn't say everybody works on all the projects all the time, because it depends on what we're doing. But there has to be that buy-in internally. Otherwise, we don't take it on. And, you know, we have turned down clients' business because of that.
I love that. I think that's one of the most important parts of selling marketing services, is figuring out who you should even sell to. And the one thing that I found out, it was a coach that I hired earlier on in my career, was have a qualifying questionnaire, right? And it goes in deep. It asks questions, whereas like, if they're not serious, they're not going to answer the questions, or they are going to answer them, you're going to be able to tell a mile away, these people aren't ready for what we have to offer specifically, right? And that's interesting to hear your processes there. Now, when you said your customer facing, did you literally mean like you're out doing sales? Because I know you also mentioned you had business development people, I believe.
Yeah, we have business development people. Yeah, I mean, they're more sort of on like a success fee type arrangement. But in terms of customer facing stuff, so client liaison, project management, all of that sort of stuff, that's driven by yours truly. And that's primarily because don't want to get into this finger pointing stuff, right? Somebody contacts somebody in web design about copy, for example, right? So then there's like internal discussions, and it all disappears down the rabbit hole, and it may or may not be documented correctly. So rather than that, and also we've got the added complication of time zones, right? Right. I've got people from San Francisco, California to Sydney, Australia, right? I wouldn't say every point in the compass in between, but that's not true. But, you know, we've got a gazillion time zones to manage. So having that in place as well is just a logistical nightmare. So having everything centralized around one point of focus, which is then dispatched to the right team or groups of teams to evaluate and actually get done, for us is the most efficient way of dealing with that issue. And it, you know, it wasn't easy to find that process. You know, there were a number of stumbling blocks that we had in between, and yeah, we screwed up a few times, sure. And I'm the first one to wave my hand and say, no, yeah, we should have done things better. But it's only through that, you know, you only know when to improve when things go wrong, right? Not when things go right.
Yeah.
And so,
go ahead.
No. So it's through that failing process is where we sort of get something which is a lot more robust and watertight.
Yeah, I love that. And that's part of the entrepreneurial journey, right? Is like falling on your face so hard. You're like, I'm not going to do that again. I got to figure out the right way to do
Absolutely.
That thing.
That's really cool. But it's also keeping that door open, because sometimes you fall on your face for a particular application, but that doesn't mean that that application wouldn't work in a different context.
Mm, good point. Yeah.
You know, and it's being open to say, yeah, okay, that didn't work because of these reasons, but that doesn't mean that in a different set of circumstances, it may have worked better.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another thing which I've learned over the years, you know, never say never.
Mm. Yeah, no, I love that. That's awesome. And then, so in terms of your direct sales process, are you out, and maybe it's a bit different these days, just the current climate, but in a more typical circumstance, what are you doing to get in front of new people? Like, are you more mostly referral based? Are you running marketing campaigns? Do you have PPC going? Like, what does that look like?
I'd say probably 80, 90% of what we do is SEO.
Mm-hmm.
And based upon the SEO, the rest is a tiny bit of advertising that we'll do. The rest is networking. Mm-hmm. I mean, we hit the professional networks quite hard. Not just LinkedIn, but Viadio and Zing as well, which you're probably not familiar with, but they're LinkedIn equivalents in other languages.
Interesting. That's cool.
So Viadio is LinkedIn for France or French-speaking world, and Zing is the LinkedIn. I mean, they'd hate for me to describe them as that. Mm. And Zing would be the LinkedIn for German-speaking countries. So, you know, we do work on that side of thing, but otherwise primarily it's SEO. We get the leads come in on a group email. I'd say we get probably 15 to 20 inquiries every single day.
Wow.
Which I think is pretty awesome, of which we probably turn down about 70% or maybe more.
Yeah.
Because they just don't fit the profile of what we're looking for, or they're side hustles, or they're people who say, what can you do for me for $150 a month, and you know, those sorts of people, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, and I reply to every single person who takes the time to write to us, right? Mm-hmm. And it's okay that I've got sort of stock emails which I'll copy and paste and crypt together, but if somebody's actually taken the time to write to us and say, you know, I'm a solopreneur. I don't have much money. This is what I'm trying to do. What can you do for me? My budget is X, and it doesn't sort of fit in with who we are. You know, I'll give them advice. I'll say, well, okay, we'll start in this direction. Have a look on these sorts of websites. If you need a logo design, then, you know, go here and don't go there. And if you're looking at some of these freelancing sites, you know, caveat emptor, make sure you get some referrals from these people, and then contact the referrals. Just make sure they're genuine, and I'll do all of that.
Yeah.
And you know, it takes what, 5-10 minutes, right? And at least it's pushed that person a little bit further down the road. I actually did that. This funny story. I did that for a very nice lady who contacted me from Canada, who was doing something D2C. And it was quite innovative at the time, what she was doing. But we just couldn't make the numbers work for her. So I said, you know, I gave her some directions and whatever else. And then she said, you know, thanks very much for pointing me in the right direction. And then about a week later, she'd sent me a bottle of champagne just to say thank you.
Mm.
Just to say, you know, most of the other agencies that I spoke to wouldn't give me the time of day once I mentioned the budget that I had. But you actually took the time to point me in the right direction, even though you had to turn me down. And I'm very thankful for that. And she sent me a bottle of champagne. And it was good champagne as well, Andrew. I mean, it wasn't some cheap junk. It was good stuff. And that was really not, unfortunately, that hasn't happened since. But, you know, it's a nice story.
Right. That's cool. I love that. Yeah, it really, like, I feel like the common recurring theme that keeps popping up here is how much you care about people in general and how much you're keeping their needs at the forefront of the work you do.
Well, we're all small businesses, aren't we? Right. So we need to stick together, right? We're all on the same team, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if I can make your business better, right, there, obviously there's a personal satisfaction, there's an emotional connection there. And it's not about, you know, you telling your peers and all the rest of it. That's not the driver here. Mm. It's about looking after our own, mm-hmm. if that doesn't sound too twee, you know, but it is. It really is. We are all on the same side. And if I can help, I will. Even if it's tough love, I'll do that. You know, I say this, and you know, you can speak to our clients, and it'll all resonate with them. I am more careful with client money than I am with my own, and I will vehemently discuss. Is probably a good euphemism to use. Vehemently discuss budgets with clients in a negative direction, right? Some sales guy will contact a client and say, you know, for only 10 grand, you will get X, Y, and Z. And it's clearly a, you know, a snake oil special, right? Mm. But they've talked a good talk. And I will argue with a client and say, look, this is not going to work. And these are the reasons why. And if you really want to get a return on that sort of money, this is what I would recommend. And the reasons why I recommend this, and I can come up with case studies from previous clients or whatever else, because I know, you know, if you know they're going to fall off a cliff, you want to go out there and lend a hand, right? Mm-hmm. Because I see that's part of my role. Part of my role is to be a soundboard, a soundboard, a trusted advisor, if you like. Because especially in smaller companies where you have like a founder CEO type profile of person, there aren't too many people that they can confide in, right? Mm-hmm. So they want somebody who's close but not too close, who they know but don't know that well, who can look at things objectively and give them no nonsense opinion. And my, you know, I see part of my role is to give clients the information for them to make an informed decision.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's awesome. I really resonate with everything you're saying. Now, why don't we wrap up here? We're getting close to the top of the hour. I know you're a super busy guy. You got your team, you got your clients, everybody to take care of. Lots of plates spinning. So I got one more question, more on the business side, and then we'll wrap up with three quick fire questions just about what you read, what you listen to, that sort of stuff. So, okay. Last business question. You're 14 years in now. Where do you see yourself at, say, in 6 years at the 20-year mark? Is there any objective you're heading toward? Maybe it's like a revenue or a team size, or maybe it's a different company altogether. Like, what are your thoughts there?
I think it's 80% of the work that we're doing now, it's more of the same. Mm-hmm. But just in the last 6 months or so, mm-hmm. we've been called in to do a lot more consulting work. Mm-hmm. And this is totally new territory for me, right? Mm-hmm. And we're working at the moment with a couple of companies in Asia. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's nothing to do with tangible deliverables in the sense of a marketing agency, but it is consultative audience research, messaging, value articulation type work, a lot more sort of 36,000 feet view type stuff. Mm. And that's very, very intriguing for me, coming in and being able to contribute to that real grassroots perception of how an organization chooses to articulate its value. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I'd like to expand upon if that opportunity arises. And it's, as I said, it's still early days. We've only had a couple of clients in that direction at the moment, but I see consulting work coming in a lot more. And I think that it's required because there's so many agencies. I mean, marketing agencies are supposed to be about standing out and being different, but if you look at how they do it themselves, they suck, right? They're useless at it. So I think there's a call for somebody to be able to come in and sort the wheat from the chaff and actually advise and guide organizations as to what those next steps should be based upon that next step that those organizations are looking at, thinking, you know, further on down the line strategically. That's something that I can see being another string to our bow down the line. But otherwise, it's business as usual, really. I mean, we're never going to run out of startups and small businesses, are we? No,
there's enough of them out there for sure.
Absolutely.
Awesome. All right. Well, yeah, that sounds like an awesome direction. I love that. I think with your like how focused you are on the absolute success of the client, I think any corporation, any small business, any startup that hires you to be that that consultant would win. Like, I don't think they could go wrong. So that's really cool. Now, in terms of wrapping up, we've got three quick fire questions. If any of them don't apply to you, of course, you can just say pass. Okay.
Okay. Fine.
So number one, what is your favorite business or marketing related book?
Whoa. Well, I don't think I can give you just one. So if I can cheat,
yeah,
right,
go ahead.
Or, you know, move the goalposts to where I want them to be, right? Because there are far too many. Byron Sharp's book, How Brands Grow, is essential reading for anybody in marketing, that's for sure. I mean, that's the one book that I insist my marketing students read as part of my marketing and behavioral science class. Well, we didn't talk about that, but yeah, I teach at a business school in Europe. I've been doing that for the last 7 years. So Byron Sharp, How Brands Grow, is a definite. Others I'd put on that list would be The Choice Factory by Richard Shotton, Spent by Jeffrey Miller, the Robert Cialdini books, Influence and Persuasion, are great. Crossing the Chasm by Jeffrey Moore, Alchemy by Rory Sutherland, Paid Attention by Faris Yacoub, Thinking Fast and Slow by Kahneman, of course, Nudge by Richard Thaler, or indeed his second book, Misbehaving, which is also really good if you've not seen it. Any book by Dave Trott, Linchpin by Seth Godin, only because there's a picture of me on the book jacket. but yeah, I mean, there's too many to mention. You know, we're living in a really, I mean, at the end of the day, most of these books are saying pretty much the same thing. In that you need to understand your customer to be able to stand out, and there's just too many people who are afraid to stand out. You know, they all want the attention, but they don't want to stand out. It's like, hang on, what? You know.
Yeah, I love that. That's awesome. Next question. Are you following any CEOs or entrepreneurs right now?
No, I'm not. And the reason why is because I don't see the point. And I don't want to sound too pompous, but I'm not about following. I'm about leading.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Good answer. And last one, what's your favorite business podcast if you listen to podcasts?
Well, apart from your one, Andrew, I mean, you know, obviously that goes without saying. Again, there are many. I'm a big fan of Scott Galloway, either his Professor G podcast or the Pivot podcast that he does with Kara Swisher. Louis Grenier's Everyone Hates Marketers podcast is usually pretty good. The Marketing Book podcast by Douglas Burdett is really good. Joe Glover's The Marketing Meetup podcast has had some amazing guests recently. That's definitely worth checking out too. But again, we're spoiled. There's just not enough hours in the day, is there?
Yeah, it's incredible to live in a time where everybody just so freely gives access to the information that they've acquired over their lifetime. I'm definitely grateful for that.
Well, I remember when we had three TV channels and that was pretty much it.
Yeah, definitely no podcasts back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome, G. Well, I really enjoyed this episode and I really thank you for coming on, and we'll drop your website, kexino.com, in the website URL or in the show notes below. Before we go, why don't we talk a little bit about maybe somebody who is looking for a company like you, what could they come to you and hire you for?
To deliver on a particular business result. That's what we're interested in doing. And then finding the right combination of marketing, sales, business development, PR, whatever tactics to deliver on that business result. And you find us at kexino.com, K-E-X-I-N-O. As you said, you'll have the link in the show notes. And, you know, let's discuss, see whether we can make it work. If we can't make it work, I'll certainly point you in the right direction. Mm-hmm. We shake hands and we walk away and maybe we talk again sometime down the road. Mm-hmm. But there's just so many snake oil salesmen out there, Andrew, right? And I just don't want people to get bitten, you know? Because it brings all of us down, and it just, you know, it puts a bad light on marketing agencies as an industry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. Well, guys, you know where to find them. If you want to get in touch, click that link. And yeah, thanks again for coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.